and be personally trusted by Putin. As Business Insider reported in August 2017, in November 2015, Sater wrote to Trump's then-attorney Michael Cohen to simultaneously boast about getting Ivanka access to Putin's office in 2006 and his present ability to get Putin to agree to a Trump Tower Moscow deal for Ivanka's father. The confluence of the two claims is striking. The former claim received a non-confirmation confirmation from Ivanka, who wouldn't say if she'd sat in Putin's chair, but simply stated that she'd never met President Vladimir Putin. Sater and his company, the Bayrock Group, have become critical to Trump's business success in the 2000s, especially with Russian investors and business partners. Yet, when asked at a civil deposition in November 2013 whether he knows who Felix Sater is, Trump, under oath, says he has seen Sater only a couple of times and that he wouldn't know what Sater looks like. The question should have been an easy one for Trump, given that Sater, the moving force behind Trump Soho, according to New York Magazine, had by then, as noted by The Nation in September 2017, been working on and off for a decade with the Trump Organization, sending Russian and other businessmen looking for luxury properties in Trump's direction. Yet, when asked about Sater just days before he headed off to Moscow for the 2013 Miss Universe pageant, see Chapter 2, Trump said, "I've seen him a couple of times. I have met him. But if he were sitting in the room right now, I really wouldn't know what he looked like." Trump maintained that story into December 2015 when, per a Chicago Tribune report, in response to a question from an Associated Press reporter about whether he knew Sater, he responded, "Boy, I have to even think about it." Trump's denials and obfuscation on the question of whether he knows Sater is particularly notable given the role Sater has played in Trump's life since 2002. As Forbes wrote in October 2016, Sater has said under oath that he represented Trump in Russia. But the timing of Sater's entrance into Trump's orbit is also notable. It coincided with Trump's selection of a Russian mobster's girlfriend as Miss Universe in 2002. As Forbes recounts, from the time Sater joined Bayrock, the Trump Tower-housed entity that often sent property-seeking clients to the Trump Organization, Sater would pitch business ideas directly to Trump, just me and him, on a constant basis. And as detailed by Guardian journalist Luke Harding in his book Collusion, Sater worked on various licensing deals for Trump properties and had a Trump Organization-issued business card that called him a senior advisor to Trump himself. What Trump presumably didn't know about Sater when the former Russian underworld operator entered his corporate milieu was that Sater had just finished up a federal cooperation deal that allowed him to escape jail on racketeering and fraud charges. Harding notes that Sater's decision to begin working for the Bayrock Group in 2000 was either an attempt to efface his past sins by returning from Moscow and working diligently for the FBI, or Sater exploiting the fact that his fraud record was under seal to make a lot of money. Regardless of Sater's intentions, in mid-2002, the year Putin's girl was crowned Miss Universe by Donald Trump, Bayrock's founder, Tefik Arif, made the decision to move Bayrock's offices into Trump Tower, just two floors below Trump's office. The Soviet-born Arif had worked for 17 years in the Soviet Ministry of Commerce and Trade. His decision to move himself inside Trump's perimeter both literally and financially, and so soon after Trump had himself come into the orbit of Vladimir Putin and Russian mobster Vladimir Golubev, seems significant. Together, Arif and Sater were central to the Trump Organization's recruitment of Soviet-born Tamir Sapir into the Trump Soho project. According to Washington Monthly, Sapir had ties to Russian intelligence. By 2013, Tamir's son Alex and Rotem Rosen, CEO of Tamir's Sapir organization, were running the Trump Soho project and, according to both men, receiving numerous inquiries from Russian oil and gas oligarchs about when Trump would construct a new tower in Moscow. They passed these entreaties on to Trump, who took them to heart by signing a letter of intent for Trump Tower Moscow soon after, see Chapter 2. In this way, Sater became essential not only to numerous Trump licensing deals, but also to Trump's two most ambitious corporate projects in this century, Trump Soho and Trump Tower Moscow. Trump Soho was announced in mid-2006 after a lengthy build-up in 2005. Plans for Trump Tower Moscow were announced in 2013. According to Forbes, Sater received in 2005, perhaps in recognition of his work recruiting the Russian intelligence-connected Tamir Sapir to the Trump Soho project, an exclusive deal to develop a project in Russia. Sater referred to this as the Moscow deal and said in a 2008 deposition that the deal had a site already selected. He was still working on the deal when he gave Ivanka a special access tour of the Kremlin. According to Professor Treisman of UCLA, that coincidence of facts suggests Sater had intimate access to Putin and a high security clearance at the Kremlin. At the same time, he was hard at work running point on a Moscow deal for Trump. While we don't know why Sater and Arif entered Trump's business network between 2002 and 2003, Trump associate Michael Cohen, who the Washington Post says met Trump in the late 1990s, may be one explanation. Cohen and Sater are childhood friends, bonding at a time when the young Cohen was trying to emulate the gangs of Soviet immigrants then ubiquitous in his hometown, Brighton Beach. There is evidence that Sater has at times jumped the fence to the right side of the law, albeit under duress and only intermittently. As reported by ABC News in March 2018, Sater says that for the past two decades, he has served as a high-level intelligence asset for the DIA, CIA, and the FBI, helping bust mafia families, capture cyber criminals, and pursue top terrorists, including Osama bin Laden, and earning praise from some of the country's top law enforcement officials. And ABC adds, while he won't say whether he's been interviewed by the special counsel, it's almost certain that Mueller knows his body of work well. Mueller served as FBI director for much of Sater's clandestine career. ETN describes Trump Jr.'s depiction of Trump Organization activities in Moscow this way. Despite a current Russian government that projects a ramrod posture, to Trump, the current leaders of Russia make the scene more scary. Holding back his grin, he said, "It's so transparent, everything so interconnected, that it really does not matter what is supposed to happen, as what it is they want to happen is ultimately what happens." It is unclear from ETN's coverage of the Trump Jr. speech who the "they" is that the young Trump Organization executive is referring to. Putin was Russia's president the first time, from May 7, 2000 to May 7, 2008, and is widely reported to have exercised tight control over the Kremlin during that period. The Guardian wrote in May 2015 that Putin spent his first two terms in office moving toward greater consolidation of his own power. When Putin first ascended to power in Russia in 2000, he ushered in an era of brutality, corruption, and fear in a nation whose landmass is the world's largest. Since Putin assumed control of the former Soviet Union, minus its many breakaway republics, it has come to be ranked 180 out of 199 nations in press freedom. PolitiFact notes that Putin's regime began to commandeer the press the very year Putin came to power. As of 2015, when Trump announced his presidential run and immediately began praising Putin and his leadership, the rate at which journalists were being killed in Russia was 34 times that of the United States. Putin has married this hostile environment for journalists with a deeply unsettling romanticizing of the Soviet era, publicly decrying Soviet repression, while, according to Kremlin critics inside Russia, attempting to whitewash the image of Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin by printing government-sponsored school textbooks that paint Soviet dictator Stalin in a largely positive light. These critics call such actions part of Putin's deliberate, systematic rollback on democracy. Putin's conspicuously deliberate retreat from democratic processes and rights has given rise to the term Putinism to describe the system of government in Russia. Putinism was described by Putin critic Boris Nemtsov prior to his assassination 100 days before Trump announced his presidential campaign as a one-party system with censorship, a puppet parliament, the ending of an independent judiciary, firm centralization of power and finances, and a hypertrophied role of special services and bureaucracy, in particular in relation to business. Nemtsov's killers were paid $250,000 to assassinate him, with the New York Times noting the evidence suggests a close ally of Putin was behind the payments. But Putin has done more than neutralize his opponents and arrest protesters and opposition leaders. In February 2014, his forces invaded Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula just one day after its Kremlin-backed president, Viktor Yanukovych, fled the country. Yanukovych was the leader Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort worked for from 2005 to 2016. Putin's unilateral military aggression in Europe deeply unnerved America's longtime European allies and resulted in sanctions in July 2014 leveled by a broad coalition of nations, including the United States, Canada, and all the nations of the European Union. Since their initial imposition, the sanctions, which have been increased and enhanced multiple times, have devastated the Russian economy, with CNBC crediting the restrictions on Russia's international trade and business operations for having taken a big bite out of Russia's economy. The sanctions have had a crippling effect on Russian oil revenues in particular, helping spark a collapse in Russia's currency, the ruble, sending the prices of Russian consumer goods soaring. Meanwhile, CNBC notes that the effect of U.S. sanctions against Russia on American businesses has been negligible, as Russia makes up less than 1% of U.S. exports. Trump Jr. also discusses the Trump Organization's reliance on Russian investors investing in the United States. "We see a lot of money pouring in from Russia," he says. A March 2017 Reuters investigation of Trump properties found 20 units in Trump Towers 1, 2, and 3 purchased by customers with Russian passports or addresses. This figure is 16 for Trump Palace, 27 for Trump Royale, and 13 for Trump Hollywood. In the summer of 2008, a Russian billionaire named Dmitry Rybalovyev offers nearly the full asking price for the property, $95 million, despite Trump having no competing offers. Trump thereby makes $54 million in 48 months. Rybalovyev immediately destroys the structures on the property that Trump had renovated and divides the land into three parcels. By 2018, he is hoping to make an $18 million profit, one-third of Trump's, in over a decade of holding the land. By January 2018, Artnet News had reported that Rybalovyev had sold two of the three lots for a total of $71.34 million, with the final lot still listed at $42 million. If Rybalovyev earns his asking price, he will have made an $18 million profit on the property in 10 years. After Fyodorova wins the 2001 Miss Russia pageant, rumors abound, spurred in part by the presence of Putin's domestic intelligence service, the FSB, acting as security at the competition, that the pageant has been rigged so that Fyodorova will win. Putin's fixation on Fyodorova, whether reciprocated or not, was both conspicuous and infamous in 2001. An April 2001 article in The Telegraph, a British media outlet, was entitled, "Putin Rigged Miss Russia Contest as Policewoman's Secret Admirer." The article, written by the Telegraph's Moscow correspondent, referenced not just whispers that President Putin personally intervened in the Miss Russia contest, but accusations in local media that the Kremlin had actually dictated the result of this year's beauty contest. At a minimum, Oksana Fyodorova's victory in that national competition, which sent her to the 2002 Miss Universe pageant, was hailed as politically correct because Mr. Putin has been described as a secret admirer of Oksana Fyodorova and is said to possess a photograph of her. The contest organizers allegedly picked her as a winner in a futile display of loyalty to the head of state. That these rumors were so ubiquitous in Moscow in 2001 that they were repeated by a media outlet in the United Kingdom is an indication that major investors in the Moscow real estate market could easily have come across them. There is substantial press attention on the pageant in Moscow as Fyodorova wins the competition and makes pageant history as the first Miss Universe from Russia. Fyodorova had to be removed from her post almost immediately. As the New York Post detailed in September 2002, Fyodorova's was a tumultuous reign that lasted only 120 days, making her the first Miss Universe to be fired in the then 50-year history of the pageant. According to the Post, Fyodorova had a tangled love life, mysterious links to Russian President Vladimir Putin, a seemingly endless supply of cash and diamond jewelry, and an attitude that tested even the most seasoned officials of the Miss Universe organization. Fyodorova from St. Petersburg had a publicly acknowledged boyfriend, a notorious Russian gangster per Pravda named Vladimir Semenyevich Golubev, commonly known as Barmalay, who also lived in St. Petersburg. Even so, she insisted on spending most of her time in Moscow, wrote the Post, which likely helped fuel rumors about her and Putin. Lest it seem unlikely that Trump would fire a Miss Universe pageant winner he'd rigged a pageant to crown, a September 2002 CBS News report clarified that the Miss Universe organization didn't actually fire Fyodorova. It merely found that she was unable to fulfill her duties, as Miss Universe organization president Paula Shugart put it at the time. Fyodorova needed to spend a lot of time in Russia, Shugart said. I believe her mother was ill at one point. For her part, Fyodorova said she gave up the title herself because while the duties of a world beauty are wonderful, my prime goal is my studies and career in Russia. The notoriously loquacious Trump was muted, saying that it was too bad it didn't work out better with Oksana. Meanwhile, rumors on both sides of the Atlantic, rumors spread even by CBS News, held that Fyodorova had had to give up her crown because she was pregnant. The Daily Mail noted in November 2009 that pageant officials were concerned because she suddenly put on weight. While those rumors were never confirmed or denied, Fyodorova was at the time connected romantically, whether you believe her, Russian media, or both, to only two men, Vladimir Putin and Vladimir Golubev. Both strong men no woman could cheat on, one imagines, without repercussions. What makes these allegations of a pregnancy worth noting here, however, is another related allegation spread by Fyodorova herself, that she quit her position because, as International Business Times put it in September 2011, she was forced by Trump's Miss Universe organization to go on the Howard Stern show. It was during that June 25, 2002 interview with longtime Trump friend Howard Stern that Oksana was asked the following question. At what point during the contest did you have sex with Mr. Trump? When Fyodorova said that she had not slept with Trump and added that he had a beautiful girlfriend, the then Melania Knaus, Stern replied, Mr. Trump likes everybody. A co-host added, Can you repeat that question to her? Rumors that Fyodorova had indeed slept with Trump were so persistent that 14 years later, Fyodorova would report to The Express, a British media outlet, that she became annoyed and frustrated during Trump's presidential campaign because Western media pestered her for information to defame the billionaire. The Express noted that Trump had taken an interest in Ms. Fyodorova and that after her victory he took care of her as her handler. Trump's interest in Fyodorova could just as easily have been financial instead of political or romantic, however. Fyodorova's boyfriend Golubev was, according to Forbes Russia, a silent partner in a holding company known as Adamant that in the 2000s boasted $540 million in annual profits. Adamant's business included restaurants, jewelry businesses, an industrial glass manufacturer, an advertising agency, a medical center, and, most significant to Trump, surely, a massive real estate construction and management operation. While noting that there were many reports in the 1990s of Golubev's links with organized crime, Forbes Russia reported in 2013 that Golubev had since gone straight and was helping Adamant ensure its operations were conducted without collisions with or participation in the well-known St. Petersburg criminal community. Participants in the real estate market of St. Petersburg believed that it was Golubev who helped Adamant in the 1990s successfully resolve issues with criminal structures. As with any Russian business, Adamant also had to stay on the right side of local government officials. In the mid-1990s, the first deputy chairman of St. Petersburg was a man named Vladimir Putin. Perhaps it's little surprise, then, that when local beauty Oksana Fyodorova won Miss St. Petersburg in 1999, just 36 months after Putin moved from St. Petersburg to Moscow to take up his new post there, she became a favorite of his. Trump's business profile suggests that business with Adamant, partly controlled by the new Miss Universe's boyfriend, was a possible motive for attempting to rig the 2002 pageant. At the time, Adamant was building the first large-scale shopping center in St. Petersburg, which history suggests is the sort of real estate project that would draw Trump's attention. 11 years later, when Trump signed a letter of intent to build a Trump Tower Moscow, it was for a site in Moscow's Crocus City complex, whose centerpiece is a shopping mall built by Aras Agalarov. While Forbes Russia may be right that by 2013 Golubev had decided to leave organized crime, as late as October 2002, just days after Fyodorova's reign as Miss Universe ended, Golubev was being called a criminal boss in St. Petersburg by Pravda. The Russian news outlet added at the time that Golubev was involved in the construction business, but also sometimes extorts money from oligarchs with the help of his allegedly powerful links in the criminal world. Trump, becoming Fyodorova's handler, put him immediately within hailing distance of Golubev's orbit, as well as Putin's, apart from any interest he may have had in Fyodorova. By 2002, Trump had learned that building in Russia is about who one knows, not the capital one has. The eyewitness asserts that Trump told the judges who to vote for, adding that a subsequent conversation among the celebrity judges revealed that several had had the same impression. The judges vote for Miss Russia, who thereby becomes Miss Universe, until her dethroning 120 days later for failure to faithfully execute the duties of her office. The contest's judges are subsequently told by parties affiliated with the pageant that Fyodorova has been dethroned because of unspecified criminal conduct by her boyfriend, Vladimir Golubev. In a September 2009 statement published by CNN and other media outlets, Paula Shugart told the media that Trump's involvement in the Miss Universe selection process ends before the final phase of the competition. The Miss Universe organization does not appear to have ever acknowledged Trump's involvement in the selection process beyond that point. However, Shugart indicated that the current pageant rules were put in place in 2005, suggesting that Trump had carte blanche to intervene prior to that year. Trump's co-ownership of the pageant with NBC didn't begin until 2003, raising the distinct possibility that NBC instituted a new judging policy in 2005, in part because it had by then seen how Trump comported himself at his pageants. Rigging televised contests is a crime, under both state and federal statutes. The applicable federal statute, 47 U.S.C. Section 509, prohibited practices in contests of knowledge, skill, or chance, carries a maximum penalty of 1 year in prison per count. Trump, who allegedly committed the crime while in Puerto Rico, where federal law applies, would have faced two counts. The first, for engaging in any artifice or scheme for the purpose of prearranging or predetermining in whole or in part the outcome of a purportedly bona fide contest, and another for participating in the production for broadcasting of a contest tampered with under 47 U.S.C. Section 509. Also in question is whether Trump's actions would have contravened state or federal statutes protecting advertisers from being defrauded by the organizers of a purportedly bona fide broadcast competition. Whether or not Trump can still be charged with these offenses, they are relevant to the Russia probe as crimes possibly committed to please the Russian president. Much has been made of Putin's pride at bringing the 2014 Winter Olympics and the 2018 World Cup to Russia, so his being the boyfriend, in reality or by reputation only, of the first ever Miss Universe from Russia could not fail to have flattered him. A Russian émigré associated with the Russian criminal underworld, accompanied by his Soviet-born business partner Tefik Arif, approaches Trump about a business partnership. The émigré, Felix Sater, will for the next few years deliver a large number of Russian clients to Trump and be instrumental in finding Russia-born partners for the biggest Trump construction project of the 2000s, Trump Soho. That Felix Sater has substantial ties to the mafia and to Russian intelligence officers is uncontested. In June 2018, Newsweek said he was linked to the mob, adding that in the 1990s, he had done business with a number of high-ranking former Soviet intelligence officers. He eventually came back to New York, but stayed in touch with some of them. In September 2017, The Nation said that Sater had a decades-long record outside the law, describing his past record as including a conviction for lacerating a man's face with a broken margarita glass, and his involvement in a multi-million-dollar stock fraud and money laundering scheme. In August 2017, New York Magazine, in addition to calling Sater the moving force behind Trump Soho, said that Sater introduced the future president to a Byzantine world of oligarchs and mysterious money, calling it verifiably true that Sater was tied to organized crime. In the Washington Post in May 2016, Sater was mafia-linked. In The Guardian in August 2017, he was the son of a local crime boss in Brighton Beach who had been involved in a mob-run stock exchange scam and had contacts in the Russian underworld. In March 2018, ABC News reported on how, in his youth, Sater discovered at a Moscow dinner party that he had gained access to a group of high-level Russian intelligence operatives who had valuable information about Russian defense technology. Such is the man Trump partnered with on some of his biggest real estate deals in the 2000s and was still working with on business deals in Russia for the first year of his presidential run in 2015 and 2016. See Chapter 4. Paul Wood, a BBC correspondent who has repeatedly broken news on the Trump-Russia story, wrote in August 2017 that, according to his sources, Sater may have already flipped, begun cooperation with Mueller, and given prosecutors the evidence they need to make a case against Trump. In the same story, Wood revealed the quality of his sourcing, noting that at least one source was in contact with and receiving information from a member of Robert Mueller's team. That source gave Wood a key piece of corroborating information on the claim that Sater was now a CI, meaning variously a confidential informant, a cooperating individual, or a cooperating informant, for Mueller. According to Wood, Sater has told family and friends he knows he and Trump are going to prison. Wood noted in his story that he received this information at a time when he had been hearing, for weeks, rumors that Sater is ready to rat again. Wood's sources, he explained in the article, believed that Sater was ready to rat again because Sater had previously been a confidential informant in an FBI probe. But in fact, we know more than this. We know that Sater is specifically willing to act as a confidential informant for Mueller in his current investigation. Sater, through his attorney, has offered to cooperate with Mueller. Per his lawyer, Sater intends to be fully cooperative with any and all government investigations in this matter. Given that at the time Sater's attorney issued his statement, Sater was being asked to cooperate only with the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, his attorney's use of the word fully and the phrase any and all is notable. In the summer of 2017, as Mueller was interviewing now cooperating witness George Papadopoulos following his arrest in late July, Sater discussed becoming a confidential informant in an interview with New York Magazine. At the time, he also made a startling claim that could have been an allusion to an upcoming FBI cooperation deal. He told the magazine, "In about the next 30 to 35 days, I will be the most colorful character you have ever talked about. Unfortunately, I can't talk about it now before it happens. But it ain't anything as small as whether or not they're going to call me to the Senate committee." The Trump family's candor is called into question again in 2014 when Eric Trump tells a reporter for golf magazine, James Dodson, that the Trump's golf courses are all financed by Russian banks and that the Trump organization has all the money we need from Russia. Dodson will report the quote in 2017 after Trump's election. Eric will contend that Dodson completely fabricated it. As recounted by Vanity Fair in May 2017, while speaking to golf journalist James Dodson in 2014, Trump's second son blurted out, apropos of nothing, that the Trump organization had access to $100 million for golf courses. When Dodson pressed Eric to explain the comment in light of the difficulty most developers had in finding golf course funding from banks during the Great Recession, Eric replied, "We don't rely on American banks. We have all the funding we need out of Russia. We've got some Russian guys that really, really love golf, and they're really invested in our programs. We just go there all the time." Though Dodson, whose beat is golf, not politics, had no reason to lie about Trump organization financing, Eric responded on Twitter to Dodson's claim by saying that Dodson had completely fabricated the conversation. Eric later told the New York Post that Dodson's account was a recollection from some guy 3 years ago through a third person. "We own our courses free and clear." Vanity Fair observed at the time that Dodson fabricating a conversation with Trump was unlikely, in part because the substance of the conversation, as reported by Dodson, was extremely likely. "It wouldn't be the first time that the Trumps had been connected to Russian money," wrote the magazine. "A number of reports have indicated the Trump organization received substantial funding from Russia when the business was struggling in the mid-1990s and again during the Great Recession, since major U.S. banks had refused to loan money to Trump." The article added that, according to Reuters, a group of 63 Russian billionaires had invested nearly $100 million, an average of $1.6 million per Russian, in Trump's Florida properties alone. Chapter 2. Trump and the Agalarovs, 2013. Summary. Trump invites a powerful Kremlin-linked developer to go into business with him while he is dramatically increasing his political profile, and after he's conducted exploratory polling to test a 2016 White House bid. During a November 2013 trip to Moscow to put on the Miss Universe pageant with his new business partner, Trump signs a letter of intent to build a Trump Tower Moscow. After Trump leaves Moscow, he maintains a strong relationship with his new Russian business associates, having left a clear impression on his Moscow hosts that he will not only run for the presidency, but on a platform opposing all sanctions on Russia. Given the opportunity to be forthcoming as to his financial and personal dealings in Moscow in late 2013, Trump dissembles, telling voters false stories about his actions that suggest he has something significant to hide. The facts. In June 2013, Donald Trump invites Aras and Emin Agalarov to join him at the Miss USA pageant in Las Vegas. Aras is a billionaire developer who does building projects for the Kremlin. Emin is an aspiring pop star. Aras's favor with the Kremlin is demonstrated in part by the Kremlin's sending a senior official, Vladimir Kozhin, to a party at Agalarov's Crocus City complex. Kozhin is the Kremlin's chief manager and called a top government official and member of Putin's inner circle by Mother Jones. Aras and Emin have gotten onto Trump's radar screen by selecting the 2012 Miss Universe, Olivia Culpo, to star in one of Emin's music videos. A trip by Miss Universe pageant officials to Moscow ensues, and discussions begin about the possibility of Miss Universe going to Moscow in 2013. The Miss USA pageant is an opportunity for Trump to speak to the Agalarovs in person about the idea. The group that gathers in Las Vegas includes the Agalarovs, Trump, Trump's attorney Michael Cohen, Emin's publicist Rob Goldstone, Trump's bodyguard Keith Schiller, and Ike Kavaladze, a vice president at the Agalarovs' company, the Crocus Group, called by The Guardian one of the biggest corporations in Russia, carrying out government building contracts worth hundreds of millions of dollars from Putin's administration. The Guardian will later write that Kavaladze has in fact been an associate of some of Russia's richest and most powerful people for the past three decades. He was involved in the $341 million takeover of a U.S. company by a Russian mining firm belonging to an associate of Putin, and was a business partner to two former senior officials at Russia's central bank. The transaction, overseen by Kavaladze, was the first time a Russian company had ever taken a majority stake in a publicly traded U.S. company. Putin was reported at the time to have personally advocated for the deal's approval by U.S. regulators. In 2000, the New York Times reported that Kavaladze helped an unknown number of Russians move more than $1.4 billion through accounts at Citibank of New York and the Commercial Bank of San Francisco. Kavaladze, who immigrated to the United States from Russia in 1991, set up more than 2,000 corporations in Delaware for Russian brokers and then opened the bank accounts for them without knowing who owned the corporations. According to The Guardian, U.S. authorities said the $1.4 billion may have been used for money laundering. On the day of the Miss USA pageant, Yulia Alfierova, a popular Russian blogger, the wife of Russian billionaire Artem Kyushin, and later the organizer of the 2013 Miss Universe pageant for the Agalarovs, posts nine candid pictures of Trump, the Agalarovs, and Kavaladze, and the other members of Trump's entourage dining in Las Vegas the night before. It is unclear whether Alfierova or Kyushin was in Las Vegas also. Trump and the Agalarovs bond immediately. "Look who's come to see me. It's the richest man in Russia," Trump bellows just minutes after meeting Aras Agalarov for the first time. The Guardian reports that Trump quickly agreed to Agalarov's offer of $20 million to bring the Miss Universe pageant to Moscow. Emin will later say that Paula Shugart, Trump's top Miss Universe executive, confessed to him of the pageant, "We have a lot of debts." Later, on the night before the pageant, Trump tells Emin that he trusts him and that the Trump Organization and the Crocus Group will have an excellent business relationship going forward. On the day of the pageant, Trump brings Aras Agalarov on stage to announce the 2013 Miss Universe pageant will be in Moscow. Trump thus chooses Russia as the next pageant site approximately 24 hours after meeting the Agalarovs for the first time and over 17 other nations. The Daily Mail will note in February 2018 that not only does Trump pick pageant sites based on business considerations, but he also uses the same measure to select the competition's finalists, titling its report on the subject, "Donald Trump Handpicked Finalists for Miss Universe from Countries He Targeted to Swing Deals and Hosted the Contest in Cities Where He Already Had a Financial Stake," former contestants claim. According to the Mail, it isn't just contestants who have accused Trump of using his pageants as a front for his business interests. Preliminary judges tasked with selecting the finalists said they were shocked when their votes were tallied and some women who advanced to the final stage weren't selected by any of the judges. Carrie Bayless, a former Miss Jamaica, tells The New Yorker of the list of finalists in the year she participated in the Miss Universe pageant. "The list looked like the countries Donald Trump did business with or wanted to do business with." In Las Vegas in 2013, the Agalarovs promised Trump not only $20 million, but also, more important, an opportunity to meet with Vladimir Putin and the prospect of building a Trump Tower Moscow on the site where the 2013 Miss Universe pageant will be held. The day after the pageant is announced, Trump tweets, "Do you think Putin will be going to the Miss Universe pageant in November in Moscow? If so, will he become my new best friend?" He also, per the Washington Post, writes a personal letter to Putin, now in the hands of the special counsel, saying, among what else is as yet unknown, that he looks forward to seeing Russia's beautiful women once he gets to Moscow. Asked by Washington Post reporters in March 2018 to give more information about Trump's private letter to Putin in 2013, Trump's then-attorney John Dowd will respond simply, "It's all nonsense," and say no more on the subject. In Moscow in the summer of 2013, a meeting with Trump is indeed penciled into Putin's diary by aides, but falls off his schedule a few days beforehand. Trump arrives in Moscow in early November 2013 with two U.S. business partners in tow, Alex Sapper and Rotem Rosen, whose ties to powerful Russians are substantial. He immediately begins conducting business meetings with bankers and other influential Russians who can help him and Aras Agalarov move forward with their Trump Tower Moscow project. After promising that he will attend the pageant, Putin suddenly chooses not to do so. He does, however, send Trump, according to Aras Agalarov, a handwritten note, the contents are unknown, and a traditional decorative lacquered box. In March 2014, at the annual Conservative Political Action Conference, Trump will tell the assembled GOP activists that "Putin even sent me a present, beautiful present, with a beautiful note. I spoke to all of his people." After Trump returns from Moscow, Agalarov's daughter will deliver a polished black box and a sealed letter from the Russian president himself. It is unclear if this is the same box and letter as Agalarov says Trump received at the pageant, but Agalarov implies it is not. In March 2018, he tells the Washington Post that Trump was leaving the 2013 pageant in Moscow with very warm feelings, very happy, because Agalarov says he had already received at the pageant a letter from Putin in a Russian lacquered box, says Agalarov, whose contents Agalarov could confirm were friendly. Prior to the 2013 pageant, Trump speaks by phone with an oligarch close to Putin, Dmitry Peskov, during which Peskov says Putin wants to invite Trump to attend the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, scheduled for February 7th through 23rd, 2014. According to some accounts, including Trump's own, Trump does speak to Putin on the day of the pageant. "I spoke indirectly and directly with President Putin, who could not have been nicer," Trump will say in a May 27, 2014 appearance at the National Press Club. A longtime friend of Trump's, actor Tom Arnold, bolsters Trump's claims of having spoken to Putin indirectly and directly, saying he has knowledge of a speakerphone call between Trump and Putin on November 9th at the Ritz-Carlton Moscow because it was witnessed, he will say repeatedly on social media, by NBC executive Chuck LaBella and others. Per Arnold, Putin called Trump at the Moscow Ritz in November 2013. Trump put it on speakerphone for everyone to hear. Putin congratulated Trump on Trump Tower Moscow and encouraged Trump to run for president and offered Russia's support. It's all on tape. According to a retrospective in The Guardian, Trump certainly claimed to have met associates of Putin in lieu of the president himself, saying, "I was with the top-level people, both oligarchs and generals, and top-of-the-government people. I can't go further than that, but I will tell you that I met the top people and the relationship was extraordinary." One of those who attends the pageant and after-party in Putin's stead is Vladimir Kozhin, who had previously attended a Crocus Group event and, from 2000 until 2014, was head of the Kremlin Property Department, according to Reuters, meaning he was one of the officials in the Kremlin with the authority to pave the way for new building projects in the city, like Trump Tower Moscow. In their book, Russian Roulette, David Korn and Michael Isikoff note that Kozhin, a senior Putin aide, was a high-level emissary sent to Trump by Putin himself. The message of welcome to Trump, and more particularly to Trump Tower Moscow, would have been, based on Trump's experience in the Moscow real estate market, unmistakable. In a 2017 interview, then-Trump attorney Michael Cohen, who was for years an executive vice president at the Trump Organization, will say of Trump Organization forays into the Russian real estate market, "Their system is different from ours. The Kremlin has to approve buildings in Moscow. That's not undue influence, that's just the way it is." According to a 2013 Miss Universe pageant official, even beauty pageants were approved by Putin. "We all knew that the event was approved by Putin," said the official, "as you can't pull off something like this in Russia unless Putin says it's okay." Another VIP guest at the pageant is a Russian who lives in Trump Tower in New York City named Alimjan Paktakunov. According to Mother Jones, Paktakunov is a vor, a Russian term for a select group of the highest level Russian crime bosses, a boss who receives tributes from other criminals, offers protection, and adjudicates conflicts among other crooks. The U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Preet Bharara, had previously indicted Paktakunov in 2013 for operating an international sports book that laundered more than $100 million, alleging that, as the indictment was described by Mother Jones, the Russian was using his substantial influence in the criminal underworld to protect a high-stakes illegal gambling ring operating out of Trump Tower in New York City. More significant to Trump's desire to meet Russian oligarchs while in Moscow is that, per Bharara's indictment, Paktakunov and others ran an international gambling business that catered to oligarchs residing in the former Soviet Union and throughout the world. As of late 2016, Paktakunov was wanted by Interpol on charges including conspiracy to commit wire fraud and bribery. During the pageant, Trump and Agalarov announced their plans to build Trump Tower Moscow, and 10 days later, more than $2 billion in funding is announced by a state-owned Russian bank, Sberbank, whose CEO, Hermann Greff, is both a close associate of Putin's and has met directly with Trump during his trip to Moscow. Greff will later tell Bloomberg he was impressed by Trump's attitude toward Russia. Both Greff and Agalarov will subsequently refuse to reveal who attended any of Trump's meetings while he was in Moscow. During one of Trump's meetings on his first day in Moscow, either Emin Agalarov or a Russian associate of his tells Trump's bodyguard, Keith Schiller, that 5 prostitutes can be sent to Trump's hotel suite at the Ritz-Carlton that night if he so desires. On the day he returns from Moscow, November 10, 2013, Trump tweets, "I just got back from Russia. Learned lots and lots. Moscow is a very interesting and amazing place. U.S. must be very smart and very strategic. The next day he adds to his prior tweet about American foreign policy by tweeting about the deal he announced in Moscow. Aras Agalarov, I had a great weekend with you and your family. Trump Tower Moscow is next. In December 2013, just over a month after his return from Moscow, Trump begins formally reaching out to influential Republicans on the subject of a presidential run, which he predicts in conversations with politicians in New York will begin in 2015. In August 2018, a top Trump advisor back in 2012 and 2013, Sam Nunberg, will tell Michael Isikoff of Yahoo News, "In 2013, I knew he was running for president. I knew he was running for president the minute Obama won Virginia in 2012. On January 22, 2014, Yulia Alfierova, an agent of the Agalarovs, tweets atop a picture of her and Trump in Moscow, "I'm sure Donald Trump will be a great president. We'll support you from Russia. America needs an ambitious leader." On March 22, 2014, Alfierova retweets Trump four times in succession, including this tweet from the then businessman. "The situation in Russia is much more dangerous than most people may think, and could lead to World War III. We need great leadership fast." On March 29, 2014, the Agalarov employee retweets Trump three times in succession, with all three tweets on the subject of the Agalarov's new business partner running for president. According to both Emin Agalarov and Donald Trump Jr., the Agalarovs and Trumps are still planning a Trump Tower Moscow at this point. Indeed, in early February 2014, less than 2 weeks after the first of Alfierova's flurry of tweets about a Trump presidential run in 2016, Ivanka Trump arrives in Moscow to scout possible locations for an Agalarov-built Trump Tower Moscow. Meanwhile, Trump is telling the media that he had contact with Putin as he was negotiating and finalizing the Trump Tower Moscow deal in Moscow. He tells Fox News on February 10, 2014, that Putin contacted him when he went to Russia with the Miss Universe pageant, and that during that contact, Putin was so nice. Soon afterward, Russia's effort to annex Crimea leads to sanctions from the United States, which forces Trump to put plans for Trump Tower Moscow on hold because the project's funder, Sberbank, is one of the sanctioned entities. 3 months later, in May 2014, Trump speaks at the National Press Club and tells the assembled reporters that when he was in Moscow for the Miss Universe pageant, he spoke both indirectly and directly with President Putin, who could not have been nicer, and we had a tremendous success. Trump adds some detail on the content of the conversation, saying, "To do well, you have to get the other side to respect you, and he, Putin, does not respect our president, which is very sad." In the fall of 2015, a Politico reporter contacts an unnamed Trump advisor to ask him about memos saying the New York businessman was involved in an orgy in Russia. The reporter explains that the information is from a document made by Fusion GPS that is floating around. The Fusion GPS document is being financed, per the New York Times, by a wealthy Republican donor who strongly opposes Mr. Trump. The Republican donor hires a journalist-owned and operated D.C. research firm to compile a dossier about the real estate magnate's past scandals and weaknesses. The Republican-funded allegation of Russian compromise against Trump, see Chapter 3, will be republished in mid-2016 by Christopher Steele, a former MI6 agent who had been the head of the agency's Russia desk. When Fusion GPS's new client is later discovered to be a law firm under contract with the DNC, Trump will tweet on October 19, 2017 about the discredited and fake dossier and ask whether it was paid for by Russia, the FBI, or the Dems, or all. When the dossier is released in January 2017, Americans read for the first time the allegations from 2015, based on research funded by a Republican Trump opponent, that someone sent prostitutes up to Trump's room in Moscow on November 8, 2013. The dossier alleges, based on multiple sources, that what happened in Trump's room at the Ritz-Carlton was recorded for the purposes of maintaining, in secret, substantial leverage over Trump for the foreseeable future, including for the entirety of his political career. See Chapter 3. The dossier also includes raw intelligence, meaning intelligence that hasn't been confirmed, on Putin using proposed real estate deals in Russia to seal Trump's loyalty. The Trump-Agalarov letter of intent will remain active, according to Aras Agalarov, for 3.5 years, a period covering the entirety of the presidential campaign. It expires only on Trump's inauguration, according to a February 2017 statement to a Russian construction website by the elder Agalarov. However, in a mid-2017 Forbes interview, Agalarov's son throws even this expiration date into doubt, revealing that the Agalarovs are still in negotiations with Trump's sons to do additional business, possibly including the building of a tower in Moscow. Because Trump has not fully divested himself from the Trump Organization, he will benefit directly should the Agalarovs and his sons perform on the letter of intent he signed in 2013. Annotated history. Trump invites a powerful Kremlin-linked developer to go into business with him while he is dramatically increasing his political profile, and after he's conducted exploratory polling to test a 2016 White House bid. On May 27, 2013, just days before Trump invited Aras Agalarov and his son to Las Vegas for the Miss USA pageant, The New York Post announced in an article entitled Trump Researches 2016 Run that the notoriously frugal Trump had just spent $1 million on pre-election research. The same day, Politico reported that Trump is musing about running for president, noting that Trump had just told a GOP county dinner in Michigan that everybody was telling him to run for president. Trump's May 2013 polling expenditures studied all 50 states to determine his popularity in each. When asked about his substantial financial outlay, Trump lawyer Cohen underscored that Trump was serious about a potential run. "We didn't spend $1 million on this research for it to sit on my bookshelf," said Cohen. "Trump is exactly what this country needs." Trump's preoccupation with politics before and during his Moscow trip has been confirmed by one of the members of his entourage, Agalarov employee and 2013 Miss Universe pageant organizer Yulia Alfierova. A November 9, 2013 tweet from Alfierova reads, "I'm tweeting, Donald Trump is talking, again and again about Obama." The picture below the tweet shows Alfierova, Trump pal Phil Ruffin, and Trump himself lounging in chairs as Trump talks on a cell phone. That Trump would be discussing politics on the phone while in Moscow, despite being in the city for only 48 hours and responsible for overseeing an international beauty pageant during that time, is noteworthy. In a January 2017 interview with The Daily Beast, Alfierova added a new gloss to Americans' understanding of what was on Trump's mind while he was in Moscow for a couple of days, working on a beauty pageant and a real estate deal. "Trump calculated every little detail coming to Moscow, knowing that our countries had serious tensions." Alfierova's comment and earlier tweet seem to confirm that Trump's preoccupations during his Moscow trip were as much political as financial. Trump knew who and what Aras Agalarov was when he entered into a letter of intent with him in November 2013. The Daily Mail has referred to Agalarov as an oligarch who brings Putin solutions, not problems, and as the Russian leader's go-to for tough projects, like wooing Trump. The Mail called Agalarov a Kremlin insider who is Putin's main property developer and the liaison between Putin and Trump. Agalarov is known as Putin's right-hand man when it comes to carrying out development projects, wrote the Mail, and the Russian president is reportedly fond of him. The Washington Post, on July 21, 2017, called Agalarov a trusted executor for the Kremlin, noting also that the Kremlin expects the country's wealthiest business executives to take on, when asked, large-scale infrastructure projects, sometimes at a loss, to promote Russia's national interests. The fortunes of Russia's rich can rise and fall precipitously based on the outcome of these prestige projects. These claims are substantiated by Putin's twice using Agalarov or his family to send gifts to Trump and choosing Agalarov for the Kremlin's grandest and most difficult land development project,